Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. And I'm going to need you to tap into that commitment today. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being subscribers to the show. We do this Wednesday episode just for you every single week. I want to focus today on essentially a single issue that I can't believe that I haven't talked about it yet. I'm sort of ashamed that I haven't talked about it yet. I think I've been so focused on public safety issues, and certainly rightfully so, but we have to walk and chew gum at the same time. And there is this proposal in the Washington State Senate that I think should be national news. I think every parent in the country should be concerned about things like this, should be talking about things like this. Bills like this are what terrify the hell out of me to even have a kid. There is this narrative that I have come to believe is more and more true by the day. It's something my friend Dory Monson used to talk about quite a bit. And I was sort of like, he's overblowing things. But in the last few years in Washington State covering politics here, it's undeniable to me. And that is that the government is trying to separate parents from their kids, take away the ability of a parent to make decisions about their kids' lives and critical aspects of their lives. And that's terrifying. And I think the older I get, the more I realize this. I don't have kids, but, you know, it's certainly a conversation that my fiancé and I are having. And now these are the kind of things I think about, which is how much control do I have over my own child versus how much control schools have, how much control the government has. And this bill is really, I think, a continuation of a previous law passed in Washington State that gives kids over the age of 13 carte blanche to seek their own medical care without consulting their parents, which is wild to me. You know, I know the arguments are, a kid might need birth control and they're too embarrassed to tell their parents that they're having sex. It's still not the government's responsibility to intervene. And to allow a kid over the age of 13 to go out to see a doctor for God knows what reason, for God knows what treatment, to get God knows what medication, and then they're living under their parents' roof, their parents are trying, they believe, to raise their children, and then they have no idea what they're doing at a doctor's office. That's insane to me. It's insane to me. And this bill is not only a continuation of it, but it continues that divide between parents and kids, and almost having the government replace parents and kids' lives. And I don't think it tries to hide it. So this is what I want to talk about today. This is going to be one of those call to action days to try to stop this thing in its tracks. I'm also going to be writing something about it. I don't know why it wasn't on my radar sooner. It is Senate Bill 5599. Senate Bill 5599. It is a completely Democrat-backed bill, no Republican support. The title of the bill, An Act Relating to Supporting Youth and Young Adults Seeking Protected Healthcare Services. So a few things to understand on background here. In Washington State, if you're a youth and you run away from home, and let's say you end up at a shelter for youth or a homeless shelter, that shelter is required to do two things. You have to call law enforcement, and you also have to call that child's rightful guardian, if one can be established. You have a certain amount of time before you're required. I think it's like 72 hours to call a child's guardian. But the important thing is when you could have certainly some instances where a child is running away from abuse, for instance, but there are laws against that. And that's why if the child, can tell law enforcement, has now separated from that abusive situation, that's where I think it's appropriate for the government to step in and say, okay, we need to protect this child under law from abuse in the household. That is all very reasonable. That all makes sense. But to suggest that there aren't kids who run away from home for stupid reasons, who have perfectly fine parents, is also ridiculous. How many of you ran away from home in one form or another during your life? And so, yeah, calling the parents and saying, hey, we got your kid here, is appropriate. Now, Senate Bill 5599 would change these notification requirements in one particular instance. Senate Bill 5599 would say that, quote, a shelter for runaway or homeless youth does not need to contact the youth's parents if there is a compelling reason not to, which includes a youth seeking protected health services. So what the bill is saying is that if you have a teenager, let's say, who runs away from home, ends up at a youth shelter, and they're doing so because their parents will not allow them to get health services that are protected under the law. In those instances, the shelter could say, okay, we won't contact your parents so that you have cover to get these protected health services. Now, what would be a protected health service under the law? I'm glad you ask. Senate Bill 5599 points to this definition of protected healthcare services. It says protected healthcare services means gender-affirming treatment and reproductive healthcare services that are lawful in the state of Washington. It goes on to define reproductive healthcare services as all services, care, or products of a medical, surgical, psychiatric, therapeutic, mental health, behavioral health, diagnostic, preventative, rehabilitative, supportive, counseling, referral, prescribing, or dispensive nature relating to the human reproductive system, including but not limited to all services, care, and products relating to pregnancy, assisted reproduction, contraception, miscarriage management, or termination of a pregnancy, including self-managed termination. It defines gender-affirming treatment as healthcare services or products that support and affirm an individual's gender identity, including social, psychological, behavioral, and medical or surgical interventions. Medical or surgical interventions. The definition goes on to say gender-affirming care services include, but are not limited to, evaluation and treatments for gender dysphoria, gender-affirming hormone therapy, and gender-affirming surgical procedures. That paints a pretty startling picture of what Senate Bill 5599 would do. It would allow any child to run away from home, go to a youth shelter, and be protected by that shelter in order to get gender reassignment surgery, in order to terminate a pregnancy, all of it without their parents being notified. So in theory, you could have a child that runs away from a perfectly happy, healthy household, but perhaps a parent who doesn't want them to get gender reassignment surgery. That would be enough of a reason under Washington state law, if this passes, for that child to run away, to go to a shelter, to get gender reassignment surgery, a surgical intervention under the protection of the state of Washington, and then to return home a different gender. Imagine that. Imagine if that was your child. Now, the purpose of this law isn't cloudy. It isn't gray. It's very simple. And the key sponsor of this bill, State Senator Marco Elias, was very clear in what he's trying to do.
At the end of the day, I look forward to a future in Washington where every single family supports their trans youth to achieve the care and success that they need. Until that day, it's up to us to make sure that there are safe places for them to learn and grow and thrive. And this bill works to create that network of loving and supportive places so that all of our people can be successful and reach the potential that we were all given at our birth.
Until that day, it's up to us. And by that, he means it's up to the government. What he's saying is that the government knows better than every single parent in the state of Washington that would not support gender reassignment surgery for their child. That's exactly what he's saying there. And he's not hiding it. It is up to us to provide that safe space.
At the end of the day, I look forward to a future in Washington where every single family supports their trans youth to achieve the care and success that they need. Until that day, it's up to us to make sure that there are safe places for them to learn and grow and thrive.
No matter how you feel about transgender issues, gender reassignment surgery for youth, that's terrifying. That's terrifying that the government would go to those lengths, admit it's going to those lengths, admit that it believes it knows better than you do what your child needs to be happy and healthy. Now, there are two issues at play here, and I want to make sure that there's a distinction. I have no issue with transgender individuals whatsoever. I think transgender rights are human rights. I absolutely believe that there are people who are born one gender who just feel in their heart and soul that they are meant to be the other gender. If you are an adult, I don't care how you live your life. I truly, as long as you're not hurting or harming anyone else, I don't care how you live your life. And if gender reassignment surgery as an adult is going to make you happy in your time here on earth, absolutely have at it. Not my issue. Now, when it comes to youth, again, I would defer to parents. Who am I if a parent says, I've got my 17-year-old kid, they want gender reassignment surgery or hormone therapy? Who am I to tell that parent that that's not in the best interest of their child? Now, do I agree with it? No. I think that when you're a child, when you are easily susceptible to the influence of your peers, when you are still developing your brain and what you want to do in life, I don't think that you should do something, or a parent should let their child do something, that could alter the course of their life forever, biologically. But again, I would defer to parents. The state is taking this so far in saying not only is it not okay for parents to have the opinion that their child should not get reconstructive surgery to change their gender, but we will pass a law that makes it okay for that child to run away from home, hold up at a shelter, and then we will help facilitate their ability to get this healthcare service. And then at some point, if they want to go back home, great. And this isn't going to be just Washington teens. You don't think that kids from across the country will find out that Washington allows for this, that they can show up at a shelter in Washington state, that their parents won't be called, and that they can head back to their home state, however many months or years later, after having whatever gender care that they desired? Come on, guys, that's not common sense. That's not right. So again, it's the issue of transgender issue, and you have to separate that from the government interfering in the relationship between parents and teens, parents and kids. By definition of the government and the state senators who are backing this bill, you're a bad parent. You're an abusive parent if you won't let your child get gender reassignment surgery. I imagine there's a lot of you out there who are just fine with transgender issues, who don't care, you know, who would support your child no matter what their gender identity is, no matter what their sexual orientation is. But I would bet that you want to have a say in any sort of surgical or medical intervention that they might feel that they need. This would take that right away from you as a parent. And not only that, this bill comes with $7.5 million in funding to help facilitate all of this. So the government is doing this at a cost to taxpayers. It's not as if they're just lifting a restriction or lifting a requirement on these shelters to notify parents. No, they're actively funding it. They're actively funding it with taxpayer dollars. I struggle so much to see how they in their own minds can justify this. And when I hear that statement from Senator Marco Elias, I think, how dare you? How dare you think you can take the place of a parent in Washington state, a good, loving parent who simply has some concerns about allowing their child to have a surgery that changes their physical attributes at the age of 15, 16, 17? How dare you believe that you know best, that you have to take over.
I look forward to a future in Washington where every single family supports their trans youth to achieve the care and success that they need. Until that day, it's up to us to make sure that there are safe places.
And there has been ample pushback. 4,500 people signed up in opposition to this bill to speak out against it. 4,500 people to have their voice heard on this issue.
Under SB 5599, a minor is able to disappear from their legal guardian if they are able to come up with a compelling reason. Compelling reasons are either if notifying the parent would subject the minor to abuse, or the minor is seeking or receiving protected health care services. A minor who is the sole responsibility of a parent by nature, who has no indication of a troubled home or utters the magic words of protected health care, will disappear from the radar of their parent or guardian. There is no safety net for the grieving parent. This bill legalizes the kidnapping of minors and, coupled with SB 5489, will make Washington State a black hole for minors. It segregates us from the union and destroys the future of our children. Please vote no.
We all want, of course, what's best for the children. We all want to give vulnerable children that are confused every opportunity to resolve their mental health issues, if that's what it is, or support and good care and safe environments. I think maybe we see differently, though, what constitutes healthy care. I don't think that children can consent to these life-altering, permanent changes to their bodies, and that parents should be the primary stakeholders in protecting the children and understanding the children, being the person the children turn to in those times of need to help the child navigate emotionally what these feelings are that they're having. It's very common for adolescents to be confused about their gender and their sexual orientation as they're prepubescent and they go through puberty, and oftentimes these resolve of their own accord. Certainly did for me.
I also cite to you today Sage's Law, or the Child Protection Act, being introduced in Virginia in honor of a teen whose location was concealed from her parents because of her stated identity, which set in motion a series of events that led to her being sex trafficked twice. Sage's Law addresses clear points of failure that led to her ordeal when institutions designated to protect her by not notifying parents of her location, further endangering her and leaving her in vulnerable situations instead. Parents know and understand a child's mental health history, comorbidities, and have a right to know about their child's location. Thank you for voting no on this bill.
Parents have the natural right to be involved in behavioral health care of their children. This is because parents are the primary caretakers of their children and are the ones who are most familiar with their children's unique needs. To cut them out is an affront to what I would consider to be the natural order of things. So anything, especially this bill, SB 5438, that can reinforce their importance, bring them back in lawfully. They're already there naturally, but for some reason, the state of Washington has pushed them out lawfully. We need to get them back in lawfully and make sure that if we're going to exclude parents, they're held to the highest standards of due process to do so. And we don't just take them out of the loop in this case. I mean, parents are the children. They're the foundation. They'll know their children longer than anybody on the planet. And it's important that we get this language put back where it should be on the books of Washington State. I encourage your support.
Thank you so much for your testimony.
This is as egregious a law as I've ever seen introduced in Washington State in 13 years. And again, it's a furtherance of the law they already passed that allows kids to make their own healthcare decisions. And, you know, a couple of the comments I've seen online over pushback of this is, well, do you want kids to kill themselves? Because if kids don't get this, they'll kill themselves. Look, of course you don't want kids to kill themselves. Of course you don't want kids. It's such a straw man argument. Of course you don't want kids to kill themselves. But when you dictate, when you say, if we don't do this, then they're going to kill themselves. If the government doesn't take over, then they're going to kill themselves. Where does that stop? How does that also help foster a healthy, stable child? To say, have the government say, hey, run away from home. Go to a youth shelter. Get surgery that could change your life and your hormones, and then you'll feel better. And then you'll feel better, and then you'll be better. And you'll be perfectly happy with your parents when you go home, and your life will be great. Come on. So here's what I'm asking of you today. We need to send emails, especially if you're a parent who's got a teen, about the impact that this could have on your household, on any household, about, from your perspective as a parent, why you think this is dangerous. And hey, if you're in support of it, send an email too. I'm all for that, whatever. But I don't think there's a lot of people who listen to this show who are in support of this bill. I want you to send emails to the bill's sponsors. Keep them civil. Speak from the heart as a parent. But just make sure that they hear your dissent on this. State Senator Marco Leas. State Senator Marco Leas is the key sponsor. State Senator Claire Wilson. State Senator Manka Dhingra. Add that to the list of things you need to email Manka Dhingra about. State Senator Emily Randall. State Senator Joe Wynn. And State Senator Liz Lovelett. State Senator Liz Lovelett. Again, speak from the heart as a parent. Talk about this, not from, you know, even if you are not in support of gender reassignment care for teens, just talk about it from a place of love and let them know why we are going down a really slippery slope, why we are going down a really dangerous path in Washington State when it comes to taking blatant actions to separate kids from their parents. Honestly, I was just going to leave it at that today. Because I just want that to sit as this singular issue that we take action on. Because I just, again, I'm kind of embarrassed that I hadn't talked about it on the show sooner. And it's so important that folks reach out on that. Because it just, every year, something else where the government feels like it needs to insert itself into the household. Where the government feels like it knows better and your teenager knows better than you do. It's absurdity. But while we're at it and talking about dumb stuff, gosh, oh, breathe, Brandy, breathe. I try to be undivided, you know? I try to be nice. I try to give both sides a fair shake. But there are some things that just lack common sense, and it's hard to be nice about it. So I want to talk about this other bill, and somebody reminded me of it today. And I had seen this one, but it looks like it just passed out of a committee. And so I wasn't sure it was going to have any legs, but apparently I'm wrong. So this is Senate Bill 5209, and it would mandate voting in Washington State. So first of all, I want everyone to vote, but I want you to want to vote, okay? If you got, you know, I get frustrated sometimes where I see low voter turnout and then people complain about election results. And it's like, well, King County's voter turnout's pretty good. So I see some of these other counties not so much. And I'm like, well, you get what you vote or don't vote for. So would love to see higher voter turnout, especially in our state. It's so easy. You get the envelope, you get it in the mail, you fill it out. You don't even have to put a stamp on it. You just send it back in. So there's no real excuse not to vote unless you just really don't want to. And if you really don't want to, I tend to think you probably don't know a lot about what's going on with these issues. And then it's like, okay, well, maybe you shouldn't be voting anyway. So again, I want more people to vote, but I want you to want to vote. Nobody should force you to vote. And that's kind of what this bill is getting at. So again, Senate Bill 5209, strictly Democrats supporting it. It says an act relating to establishing universal civic duty voting. So it says the legislature finds that the words "we the people" are central to our system of government. Universal civic duty voting would give us a system where every vote counts and the people who represent us would have to speak to all of us. Like they'll do that. People would be able to vote without obstruction or suppression. Washington voters who now solemnly accept their responsibility to sit on juries, defend our country, and pay taxes, should take the obligation to the work of government just as seriously. People must register for the Selective Service, serve on a jury, and pay taxes. They should also be required to cast a ballot. With this act, the legislature creates an election system designed to enable citizens to perform their most basic civic duty with ease. Civic duty voting declares, why can't I say the word duty? Maybe it's because I don't want to say the word duty. Duty. I'm very mature, as you can see. Civic duty voting declares that everyone counts and that everyone has a responsibility to have their vote counted. So here's what's kind of so stupid about this. Besides the mere idea of trying to force people to vote who might not want to vote, it has no teeth. So this wouldn't create, you know, some sort of crime and punishment if you don't turn in your ballot. And so it's just political theater. This does nothing to actually, like, force someone to vote. Like, sit down, the government's, like, looking over your shoulder while you vote and then following you to the mailbox. It doesn't do that. So here's what it does. It says, every person who is eligible to vote under the state constitution must register to vote using one of the methods prescribed in this title unless the person blah, blah, blah. So you must register to vote unless you obtain a waiver from the obligation to register to vote. It says a waiver from the obligation to register to vote is permanent unless withdrawn by the person who has obtained the waiver. So if you don't want to register to vote, you get a waiver, and then you don't have to register to vote. And if you do that, you don't have to register to vote until you decide that you do want to register to vote. What sense does this make? What sense does this make? It says, a person is not required to provide a reason for seeking the waiver from the obligation to register to vote. This is, it gets dumber with every passing paragraph. And this is the part that worries me. I will say, I'm not a, you know, stolen election person. Do I think our elections are perfect? No. But there's a lot of gray area between the presidential election was stolen and our elections are absolutely flawless. It says that if you're registered to vote, you must return a ballot for each primary and general election. Now, that doesn't mean the ballot has to be filled out, but you have to send it back. So we could have a bunch of people sending in blank ballots back to the state as if that will improve voter confidence in the outcome of our elections. Oh my God, you guys. This is like, I mean, are we sending our best? Are we sending our best to represent us? This is wild. Let's see. So you have to vote, but you actually don't have to vote because you can get a waiver to opt out of voting. And then even if you do have to vote, you can turn your ballot back in blank. And even if all of that, you know, isn't done and you decide you're registered to vote, you don't turn your ballot back in, nothing happens to you if you don't vote. So tell me again what the point is. Tell me what the purpose is, besides you wasting time focusing on a bill that does nothing, besides you further eroding trust in elections by allowing people and encouraging people and mandating, quote unquote, mandating people to return in ballots even if they're blank. What does this do? It doesn't do anything. It's performative politics. It makes absolutely no sense. And to think that you are wasting time on this, well, we have so many other crises going on in our state. And to think this is the kind of bill that gets a hearing in Olympia. This gets a hearing it was passed out of the Senate Committee on State Government and Elections. Passed to the Rules Committee. Think of all the other bills that are just sitting there stalled, can't get a hearing in the Senate. Pursuit bill. And this is the kind of shit that they're focused on. It's absolutely absurd. It's really disappointing, to be honest with you. It doesn't do anything. It does nothing at all. And again, I go back to what I said at the beginning. I'd love more people to vote, but only if they want to vote. Voting is really important to our country, but part of that democratic process is that people get to choose to participate in it. Okay, I want to end the show with some of your comments about the another dumb bill we discussed on the show on Monday, which would mandate you get a paddle education card if you want to take out your your stand-up paddleboard or your kayak or your canoe. This is all about, it's just a money grab from the state where they want $10 from all of you to go on and take some course saying that you'll use your paddle carefully or whatever, which, you know, I think that there are some people who go out in these floaty things and they do dumb stuff. Of course, probably a lot of them are drunk. But for instance, on Lake Union, you know, sometimes I worry about people who get too close to boats or go in front of boats or whatever. But that's common sense stuff. You don't get drunk and go paddleboarding on a river, you know, stuff like that. So this is just a money grab from the state. And it's stupid that this is what they're focusing on when there's other real public safety issues. Let's see. David on Patreon says, the required education card for human-powered watercraft is safe for legislators, partly because none of the offenders can flee from law enforcement in powered watercraft. And it's a handy tax. Yeah, that's all this is. This is an absolute tax. Let's see here. Oi, you got a license for that paddleboard? Daniel says. I wonder, the other thing I was thinking about is law enforcement has enough to do. I'm not even sure that this is something that law enforcement would be out there actively enforcing. Like, oh, hey, do you have your paddle identification card? I'd really like to see that. Who's going to do that? Who's going to waste time on that? Let's see. Another story you guys had a lot of comments on was I had Jason Rantz on the show on Monday to talk about this report he did about an elementary school in Olympia, Washington that is creating a safe space for kids, but no white kids allowed in the safe space. Y wrote, growing up in Japan, where 99% of the population is Japanese, people from other nationality and races stood out, but racist prejudice idea and concept were unfortunately introduced by other adults. As kids, we were curious and intrigued, but at least I did not have any negative thought about them until it was introduced to me by adults around me. As a mom of young children, I would be infuriated if my kids' school segregated kids of different races in the name of safety. That will do opposite of being inclusive and compassionate toward people who look, act different from us. Exactly. That's not going to be, it changes nothing moving forward. The teachers of that school are doing a horrible disservice to their students. I cannot help but agree. Let's see. Jill wrote, I work at an elementary school as a paraeducator. My job is to work with students before grade level in small groups from K through 5. We have a very diverse school, so I have Black, Hispanic, White, Ukrainian, Russian, you name it, mostly middle class or low income kids in my groups. These kids don't have a racist bone in their bodies. They like those who are kind, friendly, and nice. They may not like a fellow student due to character, not the color of their skin. If they're against others, another's race besides their own, it's from their home or possibly a teacher. I personally don't know any teacher that would try to brainwash a student, but I'm sure it's out there. I love teaching all the kiddos how to read. It's fun and challenging. Yeah, and, you know, schools have become at the center of this culture wars, and some of that, I believe, is justifiable, and this is an example of that. Of course, you have the most egregious examples that the news finds out about, but, you know, when it's in one school, it's obviously going to be in others, and this Olympia, so what I'm trying to say is, of course, there are so many good teachers who would never do this, would never dream of doing this, segregating kids on the basis of race into groups. It's insane. So, yeah, I don't mean it to be a knock on all teachers. Melissa writes, if I had school-aged children, I would absolutely not put my kids in a public school. My kids, all five of them, went to public school, but none of this was happening. And I mean, none that we know of, but I certainly don't think to this extent of the activism and teachers thinking that's okay. And it's one of the things that came out of the pandemic. Remember, a lot of these parents would overhear their kids were doing Zoom classes and they'd be like, excuse me, what did your teacher just say? And they'd get a video of it. Whereas before, parents weren't in classrooms, and then classrooms came into our homes. And then so many parents were like, oh my God, I was mortified by what there was the one instance of the kindergartners having to start their class with the I'm on stolen land chant thing, acknowledgement. Wild stuff. Let's see if I have any other comments on that. I also talked about the legislature trying to decriminalize jaywalking. Daniel writes, I'm okay with the state decriminalizing jaywalking, but at the same time, they should be giving drivers immunity if someone walks in front of a car while jaywalking and gets hit as a result. And, you know, I'm always for anything, like, I want the government to be hands-off. For instance, if you don't want to wear a seatbelt in your car, fine. Like, that's your choice. But with jaywalking, my issue is you are, as Daniel points out, you are creating a difficult situation for drivers where we're basically having to play Frogger because you've decided to run across the street in the middle of nowhere. So that is what concerns me about that particular bill. Also, the fact that simultaneously Democrats are pushing that bill to ban right on reds to protect pedestrians. And then also just saying, oh, but you can jaywalk. It makes no sense in the world. All right, that's it for this subscriber-only episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. And again, please, please, please send emails on Senate Bill 5599. It's egregious. And even if you don't have kids, we shouldn't want the government meddling in households in this way. It's just not right. I will see you guys on Friday.